Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am not Reverend Sandy Ingham. Sorry, that was just a carryover from last week. I'm Robin Proud, and I'm a member of the program committee. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age, your abilities, or inabilities. Later in the service, we'll invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves, if you wish to, so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of programs. Sometimes they are presented by a Prairie member, such as this morning. Sometimes it's a member of the wider community or our minister, Sandy Ingham. For this morning's announcements, just a reminder that this morning's offerings will be shared with Beacon House, which is the homeless day shelter that is scheduled to open in October. Another announcement is it's Circle Dinner sign-up time. Circle dinners are a great way to get to know your Prairie friends. Briefly, small groups meet in members' homes or at Prairie or some other venue and share a meal together. It's great fun, don't miss out, so sign up in the foyer today. And if you have questions, see Heidi Hughes. Oh, we have another late breaking announcement. Breaking news, we need that banner across the bottom. Rachel Long is the lead teacher this year for the youth group class, grades 8 to 12. Please consider subbing once or more. So Rachel is the main teacher. I also work with that class, and Rick will be helping us sometimes, but we would like to have some additional folks. This year we're doing a curriculum where we watch some snips from movies and have discussion and activities based on them. So talk to Rachel. All right.
Can I give one? I didn't have time to write.
Yeah, go ahead. Are you bringing us something?
I have 3 packets of daily seeds, which are stoloniferous, which you may not want. That means I put out roots for new plants. But they are pink with a gold throat.
All right, thank you. Mechie has daylily seeds, so please see her if you're interested. And for other announcements, refer to your order of service or the bulletin boards. Our opening words will be read by Mary Mullen.
This is by Adrian Rich. My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who, age after age, with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world.
And our first hymn is number 323. Please stand as you are willing and able.
Thank you.
Chalice Lighting. Please welcome Jesse and Andy Garst.
I will sing for the people who might not sing for me. I will sing for the people who are not my family. I will sing honor songs for the unfamiliar and new. I will visit a different church and pray in a different pew. I will silently sit and carefully listen to new stories about other people's tragedies and glories. I will not assume my pain and joy are better. I will not claim my people invented gravity or weather. And oh, I know I will still feel my rage and rage and rage, but I won't act like I'm the only person on stage. I am one more citizen marching against hatred. Alone, we are defenseless. Collected, we are sacred.
Now we have a story for all ages read by Anna Urbanski. So if the young people who are young at heart would like to come up.
And it will not be read a crayon story. It will be, yes, it will be And Tango Makes Three. And Tango Makes Three is a true story. So let's see what we have here. Okay. A lot of pictures. Okay. In the middle of New York City is a great big park called Central Park. Children love to play there. It has a toy boat pond where they can sail their boats. It has a carousel to ride in the summer and an ice rink to skate on in the winter. Best of all, it has its very own zoo. Every day, families of all kinds go to visit the animals that live there. Beautiful pictures. But children and their parents aren't the only families at the zoo. The animals make families of their own. There are red panda bear families with mothers and fathers and furry red panda bear cubs. There are monkey dads and monkey moms raising noisy monkey babies. There are toad families and toucan families and cotton top tamarin families too. And in the penguin house, there are penguin families. Every year at the very same time, the girl penguins start noticing the boy penguins. And the boy penguins start noticing the girls. When the right girl and the right boy find each other, they become a couple. Two penguins in the penguin house were a little bit different. One was named Roy and the other was named Silo. Roy and Silo were both boys, but they did everything together. They bowed to each other, and they walked together, they sang to each other, and they swam together. Wherever Roy went, Silo went too. They didn't spend much time with the girl penguins, and the girl penguins didn't spend much time with them. Instead, Roy and Silo wound their necks around each other. Their keeper, Mr. Gramsci, noticed that the two penguins and thought to himself, they must be in love, because I guess penguins do that when they're in love. Roy and Silo watched how the other penguins made a home. So they built a nest of stones for themselves. Every night, Roy and Silo slept there together, just like the other penguin couples. So there's their nest. And every morning, Roy and Silo woke up together. But one day, Roy and Silo saw that the other couples could do something they could not. The mama penguin would lay an egg. She and the papa penguin would take turns keeping the egg warm. And finally, it would hatch. And then there would be a baby penguin. Roy and Silo had no egg to sit on and keep warm. They had no baby chick to feed and cuddle and love. Their nest was nice, but it was a little empty. One day, Roy found something that looked like what the other penguins were hatching, and he brought it to their nest. It was only a rock. But Silo carefully sat on it, and sat, and sat. When Silo got sleepy, he slept, and when Silo was done sleeping and sitting, he swam, and Roy sat. Day after day, Silo and Roy sat on the rock, but nothing happened. Why was that? Because it was a rock. It was not an egg. Then Mr. Gramsci got an idea. He found an egg that needed to be cared for, and he brought it to Roy and Silo's nest.
Roy and Silo knew just what to do. They moved the egg to the center of their nest. Every day they turned it so each side stayed warm. Some days Roy sat while Silo went for food. Other days it was Silo's turn to take care of the egg. So there's the egg. They sat in the morning and they sat at night. They sat through lunchtime and swim time and supper. They sat at the beginning of the month and they sat at the end of the month. I don't know how long it takes for a baby penguin to hatch. And they sat all the days in between, apparently a long time. Until one day they heard a sound coming from inside their egg. Beep, 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 it said. Roy and Silo called back. Squawk, squawk, beep, beep, answered the egg. Suddenly, a tiny hole appeared in the egg shell. And then, look, 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 look. Oh, there it is. Crack! Well, out came their very own baby. She had fuzzy white feathers and a funny black beak. Now, Roy and Silo were fathers. We'll call her Tango, Mr. Granzy decided, because it takes two to make a tango. Roy and Silo taught Tango how to sing for them. When she was hungry, they fed her food from their beaks. They snuggled her in her nest in their nest at night. Tango was the very first penguin in the zoo to have two dads. Soon Tango grew strong enough to leave the nest. Roy and Silo took her for a swim just like all the other penguin families. And all the children who came to the zoo could see Tango and her two fathers playing in the penguin house with the other penguins. Hooray, Roy! Hooray, Silo! Welcome, Tango, they cheered. At night, the three penguins returned to their nest. There they snuggled together, and like all the other penguins in the penguin house, and all the other animals in the zoo, and all the families in the big city around them, they went to sleep. Yeah. All right.
Story has been challenged in some schools that people were trying to change to turn kindergartners into some sort of deviants by reading that story in public schools. As a caring community, we now take time to briefly share special joys, sorrows, or personal concerns with our prairie friends. And I believe Rachel Hughes has the microphones. Oh, very convenient.
Hi. This is sort of an afterthought about the 50-year anniversary. Last weekend, I couldn't come because the German department also had a big reunion and a banquet and all that, and I had to make a choice. So what I wanted to bring to Prairie, just as a little gift, is a small book that the Raging Grannies, of whom you've heard, and Park is in it too, but I'm the Raging Grannies are giving to the library of this congregation. And I'm going to give it to Mary Mullen. You could put it into the library. And I just want to read the dedication that I wrote in here. To Prairie UU Society, on your 50th anniversary, with love and gratitude for being my spiritual home, source of strength and joy, just like a family. This is from Rose Marie of the Madison Raging Grannies, with love.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For those who don't know, the library is actually next door in the annex, and you're welcome to check things out. My joy is that my mother, Phyllis Long, is not here today because she is at home with her husband celebrating their 61st wedding anniversary. And the secret to that sort of thing is get married really young and live a long time.
I just want to give one more thanks to all the people who put together the celebration last weekend. It was just so very moving and celebratory.
My joy is that after a long and extremely stressful apartment search, and with the help of people from this congregation, especially Sandy, I think I found a place to live. And barring government paperwork mess ups, I will be moving within the next couple weeks. Thank you.
All right, and we'll light a candle for any joys and concerns that were unspoken. Now we have a moment of silent meditation. No, the wrong one.
Yeah.
This one? Okay.
There's still one on behind.
Oh.
Yeah, I can't see my what I'm writing.
Okay.
But I'm reading it.
All right. Our speaker today is well known to us. Ann Urbanski is a longtime member of Prairie Ann, has graciously taken this on even though she's in the middle of a dramatic move, which we will miss her so much, but we're very happy to have her here today. Please welcome Ann Urbanski.
Good morning. And I have a big, long presentation here. So, so hang in there. Okay, I'll put this over here. All right. So we all know of current and earlier LGBT celebrities. Ellen DeGeneres, Elton John, Rock Hudson, Freddie Mercury, Chaz Bono, Caitlyn Jenner. Today I'll talk about many other lesser known LGBTQ people, as well as important political and cultural milestones. The information in this service was initially developed for a one-day workshop last March. In its second year, this workshop, called Connections, sought to develop connections across generations of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and other queer people in the Madison area. A goal of this year's conference was to show that LGBTQ people have existed around the world through recorded history. My friend Joe Elder, Emeritus Professor of Sociology at UW-Madison, provided many of the historical items for our Connections displays, while I mostly found images and organized the information into a presentation for display boards. This summer, I offered to do a service using the same information edited into a slide presentation. Due to time constraints, this presentation will focus on national and international LGBTQ history. I have a lot to get through, so please save your questions for after the slideshow. Please note that rather than BC and AD, I'm using BCE, which stands for Before the Common Era, and CE, which stands for the Common Era, starting at, well, we're 2017, Common Era. Okay, so Penny, you can go on. Okay. 2400 BCE, in Egypt, two male manicurists whose names I cannot pronounce were buried together in an expensive tomb similar to how married couples were buried. Both were married to women and had children. Some consider them to be history's first recorded gay couple. So that's 4,400 years ago. Next. 1496 BCE, there are several traditional dates. The story of Sodom and Gomorrah. In many interpretations, God destroyed both cities for their immoral behavior. According to much later scholarly interpretations, the real sin of Sodom and Gomorrah was failing to be hospitable to strangers. This story provides the origin of the term sodomy with all its negative implications. Next. 620 to circa 560 BCE, there lived Sappho, a Greek female poet on the island of Lesbos. She addressed romantic poetry to a woman. The story of Sappho provides the origin of the term lesbian. Next. 500 to 300 BCE was the golden age of Greece. In some cultures, such as Greece and Rome, acceptable male behavior included sex with lower status people, not only free women, but also slaves, younger men, and boys. Being penetrated was to be avoided. This statue depicts the god, the Greek god Zeus, husband of Hera. Zeus selected a young male, shown here, Ganymede, to be his cupbearer and lover. Next. From 371 to 338 BCE, the sacred band of Thebes. Thebes is a town in central Greece, which has been continuously inhabited for five millennia. In the early 4th century BCE, it was the most powerful city in Greece. During that period, a band of 150 gay male couples formed the elite of the Theban army until they were wiped out in a final battle. The next several items don't have slides. Before 256 BCE, an unknown Chinese author published a treatise called Poetical Essay on Supreme Joy, joy being sex, describing homosexuality as one form of joy. 27 BCE to 180 CE, the Pax Romana. Latin writers like Virgil and Juvenal explored homoerotic themes. Emperors such as Nero held public wedding ceremony, quote, wedding ceremonies with male athletes. To around 200 CE, two lengthy Hindu epics, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, were completed. Both contain accounts of accepted transgender and third gender persons. Next, Penny. All right. Yeah, around 310 CE, story of a Christian male couple, Serge and Bacchus, serving in Roman army. They were martyred for refusing to worship the Emperor Galerius, and they became Saint Serge and Bacchus, always connected. And they have a saint's day sometime. All right. Okay, next few have, don't have slides. Around 500 CE to 900 CE, some Christian churches in Europe were performing marriages of same-sex couples. 656 CE, the Muslim Quran was completed in Arabia. The Quran includes accounts of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. 1100 CE, Japanese literary accounts of Buddhist monks frequently having sexual affairs with young boys. Next, please. Around 1600 to 1700 in this current era, Europeans in North America used the term burdash to describe individuals in Native American communities in non-conforming gender roles. Burdashes, now called two-spirit, sometimes held positions of special respect in their communities. Shown here is Wewa, a Zuni from New Mexico, photographed in 1879. No slides for the next few. In 1629 CE, the British the British colonies of North America, the Virginia court recorded the first gender ambiguity among the North American colonists. A servant named Thomas or Thomasine Hall was officially declared by the governor to be both a man and a woman. To stop everyone else from being confused, Hall was ordered to wear articles of each sex clothing every day. Around 1750, a famous Chinese novel called Dream of the Red Chamber described men engaging in behavior with other men as well as with women. 1806, Nicholas Biddle, an early explorer of America, found that among the Minnetarees, a Native American tribe of what is now North Dakota, quote, if a boy shows any symptoms of effeminacy or girlish inclinations, he is put among the girls, dressed in their way, brought up with them, and sometimes married to men, unquote. 1825 to 1895, Karl Heinrich Ulrichs, a German lawyer and writer, described a third sex theory that sex drive was separate from sex organs. He publicly identified himself as such a person. Okay, next slide, please. All right. Russian composer Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky, shown at left, lived from 1840 to 1893. He was in love with his nephew, shown at right, Vladimir Davidov, and dedicated the Pathetique Symphony to him. Next. 1854 to 1900 was when Oscar Wilde lived. He was a widely acclaimed Irish author and playwright. After two highly publicized trials, he was found guilty of, quote, gross indecency between males and served 2 years hard labor in prison. In his first trial, Wilde defended, quote, the love that dare not speak its name. Also attributed to Wilde is my favorite saying, be yourself, everyone else is taken. The next three don't have slides. Okay. In 1868, the oldest documented use of the terms homosexual and heterosexual found in a letter from Carol Maria Kertbeny, a Hungarian-German writer, to Carl Ulrichs. 1884 to 1888, Uganga had a gay king, King Mangwa II, who was widely reported to have had affairs with his male servants. 1905 to 1930s, in London and Paris, there were active salons of out lesbian writers, poets, painters, satirists, and activists, including, but not limited to, Gertrude Stein, Alice B. Toklas, Colette, and many others. Next slide. Okay. And let's see, here we are. Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld, a German sex researcher, in 1919 founded the Institute for Sexual Research in Berlin. After the Nazis came to power in 1933, they destroyed his institute. Next. Henry Gerber, in 1924, founded the Society for Human Rights in Chicago. This is the earliest known registered homophile organization in the United States. No slide. In 1920s to the mid-30s, the Harlem Renaissance was a period of highly creative cultural activity by musicians, artists, writers, and socialites in the Harlem district of New York City. Characterized by racial mingling, the Renaissance included gay, lesbian, and bisexual participants with such events as impressive drag balls. And I found out, but didn't manage to get a picture, that the famous singer Ethel Waters routinely appeared in a giant tuxedo and top hat when she performed. So, all right, next slide. From 1935 to 1945, the Nazis persecuted homosexuals, primarily male. This included imprisonment in concentration camps, where they were identified by a pink triangle on their prison clothes. An estimated 10 to 15,000 gay men died in this persecution. All right, next few items don't have slides. On September 13th, 1931, whoops, this should have been earlier, Lily Elba, who was born in 1882, died while having an experimental surgery to insert a uterus into her body. The first trans woman to have gender confirmation surgery, Elba had the support of her ex-wife, who became her roommate following her coming out, and who was with Elba when she died. And I believe, but I'm not 100% certain, that the movie The Danish Girl was based on the story of Lily Elba. In 1935, The Children's Hour, a play by Lillian Hellman, opened on Broadway. It is a drama set in an all-girls boarding school run by two women. An angry student runs away from the school, and to avoid being sent back, she tells her grandmother that the two headmistresses are having a lesbian affair. The accusation proceeds to destroy the women's lives and careers. The play was quite controversial, and local organizations in Boston and Chicago prevented performances in those cities. In 1946, the Center for Culture and Leisure, the world's oldest LGBT supportive organization, was founded in the Netherlands. In 1948, Alfred Kinsey released research that revealed that homosexuality is far more widespread than commonly believed at the time. In 1950, the Mattachine Society was founded in Los Angeles by Harry Hay and some of his male friends to improve the rights of gay men. Next, please. Oh, I'm sorry, okay. In 1952, Christine Jorgensen was believed to be the first American known to have had a sex change surgery, now known as gender confirmation surgery. Okay, following don't have slides. The Daughters of Bilitis were founded in 1955 in San Francisco. This was the first national political and social organization for lesbians. In 1956, the poem Allen Ginsberg published his epic gay poem, Howl. In 1962, Illinois became the first state to decriminalize private consensual homosexual acts. Next. In 1963, Bayard Rustin played a major role in organizing the March on Washington. Unfortunately, his participation and his important role were marginalized at the time because he was gay. In 1967, the magazine The Advocate was founded to support the gay and lesbian communities. The Advocate is now published bi-monthly and also has a website. It is the oldest continuing LGBTQ publication in the United States. Next slide. Okay. In 1969, the Stonewall riots against abusive police incited widespread protests in favor of equal rights and acceptance for LGBT people. Two of the leaders of the riots were Sylvia Rivera and Marsha Johnson, who were both trans women of color. In 69, the support group Dignity was formed by and for Catholics and other gay Christians. And in a more local note, one of the few I have in here, in 1971, Donna Burkett and Mononia Evans applied for a marriage license in Milwaukee. Their federal case was dismissed in 1972. Next slide. There we go. Okay. PFLAG. PFLAG. Yay. The idea for PFLAG began in 1972 when Jeannie Manfred marched with her son Morty in New York's Christopher Street Liberation Day March, the precursor to today's pride parades, which we now have all over the country. After many gay and lesbian people ran up to Jeannie during the parade and begged her to talk to their parents, she decided to begin a support group. The first formal meeting took place in March 1973 at a Methodist church in Greenwich Village. Approximately 20 people attended. PFLAG now has more than 400 chapters across the United States and more than 200,000 members, including me. All right. In 1972 to 73, an American sitcom called The Corner Bar aired on ABC. It only lasted 1 year. The series included the first recurring gay character on American television, played by the actor Vincent Schiavelli. Next slide. Okay. 1973, Democrat Barbara Jordan became the first African American elected to Congress from Texas. Although she never discussed her sexual orientation, at her death in 1996, she was survived by a longtime female companion. Also in 1973, the American Psychiatric Association stopped designating homosexuality as a mental illness. Thank you. Next slide, please. In 1975, Tech Sergeant Leonard Matulovich, a Purple Heart recipient for his service in Vietnam, became the first soldier to fight the U.S. military's ban on gay service members. And as you see, he appeared on the cover of Time magazine. From 1976 to 2015, the Michigan Women's Festival was an international feminist music festival held every August in Oceana County, Michigan. The event was completely built, staffed, run, and attended by women. Throughout its 40-year history, the festival occupied a central place in lesbian history, quote, an entire city run by and for lesbian feminists. From 1977 to 81, the American sitcom Soap ran on ABC. Actor Billy Crystal played the role of Jody Campbell, a gay man having a secret affair with a famous professional quarterback. Jody was among the first gay characters on American television, and certainly the first one in a series that lasted more than a year. Okay. In 1978, Cleve Jones and friends in San Francisco conceived what became the AIDS Memorial Quilt that toured major U.S. cities with thousands of panels bearing the names of friends who died of AIDS. Next, please. In 1978, Harvey Milk, the first openly gay elected member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, was assassinated by a colleague named Dan White. In the early 80s, the AIDS crisis led to new organizing and advocacy within the LGBT community. Also in the 80s, pop icons Boy George and George Michael were popular within the gay community. Both eventually came out as gay. In 82, Wisconsin became the first state to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. All right, yeah, under Pat Lucy? No. In 1984, the UUA officially began to support UU clergy performing services of union between same-sex couples. In 86, the Quakers, Society of Friends, agreed to perform same-sex marriages. In 89, UW-Madison faculty voted for removal of ROTC units from Madison campus unless units ended their ban on LGBTQ people. Okay. All right. Next slide, please. All right. Ryan Wayne White was born on December 6, 1971 and died on April 8, 1990. He was an American teenager and hemophiliac from Kokomo, Indiana, who became a national poster child for HIV/AIDS in the United States after failing to be readmitted to school following an AIDS diagnosis, which happened after he had received contaminated blood. Before White, AIDS was stigmatized as an illness impacting only the gay community. That perception shifted as White and other prominent HIV-infected people, such as Magic Johnson and Arthur Ashe, advocated for more AIDS research and public education. The U.S. Congress passed a major piece of AIDS legislation, the Ryan White Care Act, shortly after White's death. The act has been reauthorized twice, and Ryan White programs are the largest provider of services for people living with HIV/AIDS in the United States. Also, in 1991, the Westboro Baptist Church began demonstrating against LGBT people. The congregation, led by our favorite pastor, Fred Phelps, has been involved in actions against gay people since at least that year, when it sought a crackdown on homosexual activity at Gage Park, not far from the church. Oh, this was in Wichita, Kansas. In 2001, Phelps estimated that WBC had held 40 pickets a week for the previous 10 years. Prior to his death in 2014, and according to one of his sons, Fred Phelps expressed support for the Equality House that was now exists across the street from the church and was excommunicated by church leaders. This is a little bit apocryphal, nobody knows for sure. In 1993, President Bill Clinton signed into law, Don't Ask, Don't Tell legislation requiring LGBTQ persons in the armed forces to stay in the closet. Next slide, please. In 1993, transgender male Brandon Tina was murdered in Nebraska. This provided the storyline for the 1999 film, Boys Don't Cry. In 96, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Colorado's Amendment 2, which denied lesbians and gays protection from discrimination. Also that year, a lot of things happened in 96, the UUA officially supported marriage equality for same-sex couples. And also in 96, President Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, which defined marriage for federal purposes as a union of one man and one woman. In 1998, Tammy Baldwin ran for Congress and won, the first open LGBTQ person to do so. Next slide. In 1998, Matthew Shepard, a gay University of Wyoming student, was beaten and left to die tied to a rail fence. His play stimulated discussion of special penalties for hate crimes. It also inspired the play The Laramie Project. I have a bunch that don't have slides now. We're getting close. In 1999, Proud Theater, a theater troupe for queer teens, was formed in Madison. I'm proud to say that I am friends with the two guys who run it now, Brian Wild and Callan Hardy, and they have Pride Theaters now in Milwaukee and Wausau and Green Bay, and I'm not sure, there may be another one in the works. In 2000, Introduction to LGBTQ Studies, what course was taught at UW-Madison for the first time by Professor Joe Elder. 2001, Netherlands became the first nation to legalize marriage equality. Also in 2001, the Madison Metropolitan School District hired its first research teacher for LGBTQ students. The position is still functioning today. I think we're on about the third or but probably their fourth person holding that position. In 2003, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down state sodomy laws, and the Massachusetts Supreme Court ruled that barring lesbians and gays from marriage, quote, denied the dignity and equality of all individuals and makes them second-class citizens. In 2004, marriage became legal for same-sex couples in California for several months until voters passed Proposition 8. In 2005, Spain became the first predominantly Roman Catholic nation to legalize marriage equality. Next slide. Okay. All right. Okay. 2005, Brokeback Mountain was released. This American romantic drama, directed by Ang Lee, depicted the complex emotional and sexual relationship between Annis Delmar, played by Heath Ledger, and Jack Twist, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, in the American West from 1963 to 83. Both characters went on to marry women and have families while keeping their relationships secret. 2006, voters approved the Wisconsin Marriage Amendment Act that banned same-sex marriages in Wisconsin. 2008, the lesbian couple Lady Vassura and Jenny first appeared in the episode A Good Man Goes to War in the BBC series Doctor Who. In 2008, legal same-sex weddings began in Massachusetts. Also in 2008, Lawrence Larry King, a 15-year-old gay boy in California, was murdered by a classmate who was offended by Larry's romantic attentions. Next slide, please. Okay. All right. 2009 to the present, RuPaul's Drag Race, which is a competition for drag queens, is a hit on the Logo Cable Network. This is shows the contestants from season 7. So, 2010, Congress passed a law repealing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in the U.S. military. 2012, a gay kiss was shown on screen in Saudi Arabia for the first time. Yeah. The kiss happened in the UK soap Brookside, and it was the first ever televised lesbian kiss in the UK, and it was originally aired in 1993. So it took 19 years to get to Saudi Arabia. The kiss was aired as part of the opening ceremonies at the London Olympics. Next, please. In the United States versus Windsor, the US Supreme Court overturned the Defense of Marriage Act, which had defined marriage as for federal purposes as between a man, one man and one woman. That same year in Hollingsworth versus Perry, the US Supreme Court overturned California Proposition 8. And many of you may know that Edie Windsor died at age 88 on September 12th. And she's a hero. Okay. In 2014, a federal judge struck down Wisconsin's ban on same-sex marriage, ruling that it violates the US Constitution. Also that year, the conservative legal group Alliance Defending Freedom began the bathroom bill movement with a letter to school districts across the country recommending a policy that would require transgender students to use private bathrooms or the multi-stall bathrooms corresponding with their birth sex. In the following months, the ADF also proposed model legislation to state assemblies calling for similar restrictions. In many cases, lawmakers appear to have been to have mirrored or even copied the group's draft while creating their own bills. And there has been one here in Wisconsin that fortunately failed. Okay. Next slide, please. Transgender actress Laverne Cox in 2014 began a recurring role as Sophia Bursette, a transgender inmate on the Netflix series Orange is the New Black. She was also the first transgender person to appear on the cover of Time magazine. In 2015, Black Lives Matter was founded by three women, Alicia Garza, Opal Tometi, and Patrice Coulars, two of whom are lesbians. In 2015, Obergefell versus Hodges, the Supreme Court held in a 5-4 decision that the fundamental right to marry is guaranteed to same-sex couples by both the Due Process Clause and the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. In 2015, GSAFE, a Madison-based organization, coordinated a large and successful effort to stop Wisconsin Assembly Bill 469, which would have barred transgender students from using bathroom and locker facilities aligned with their gender identity. The bill died in committee. Next slide, please. All right. In 2016, President Barack Obama dedicated the new Stonewall National Monument in Greenwich Village, Lower Manhattan, as the first U.S. national monument to honor the LGBT rights movement. Next, please. In 2016, on June 12th, 49 people were murdered by a heavily armed gunman at Pulse, a popular gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. In this act of domestic terrorism was the worst massacre, an act of domestic terrorism, the Pulse massacre was the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. The victims were LGBTQ folks and their allies from Central and South Florida. In response to the Orlando massacre, various government entities flew the pride flag, including the White House, the Madison Municipal Building, and the Madison-Dane County City-County Building. Also in 2016, the Department of Education issued guidance to public schools stating that Title IX protects transgender students from discrimination based on their gender identity and presentation. Unfortunately, the current administration has backtracked on this guidance. Next slide, please. In July of 2016, Sarah McBride became the first transgender person to address the Democratic National Convention. And she had been a student body president at her university and came out there and then became an intern at the White House. In April of 2017, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the Civil Rights Act prohibits workplace discrimination against LGBT employees after Kimberly Hively sued Ivy Tech Community College for violating Title VII of the Act by denying her employment. Next slide, please. All right. This is the last slide, but I have a couple of other items. In June of this year, Ashton Whitaker, a transgender student at Tremper High School in Kenosha, had sued the Kenosha School District to use the boys' bathroom at school. A U.S. court judge in the Eastern District of Wisconsin agreed with him, and the school district appealed to the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, which covers Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. In June, the Court of Appeals ruled unanimously in favor of Ash Whitaker and students like him. Judge Ann Claire Williams wrote, quote, the harms identified by the school district are all speculative and based upon conjecture, whereas the harms to Ash are well documented and supported by the record. Finally, the two more items which are not very good. In July of this year, President Donald Trump tweets his intention to ban transgender people from joining the U.S. Armed Forces and to force current trans military people out of the service. And there are estimated to be up to 15,000 transgender members of the U.S. military, and many of them are in positions that would be difficult to fill if they were forced to leave. Finally, also not very good, last month, leaders of major U.S. evangelical churches issued the Nashville Statement, which denounces homosexuality and transgender identities. So as you can see, there's a lot of stuff. A great many things happened. A great many people came out and were pioneers. And so that's all I have to say. There's a lot. So that's it. That's my presentation. Comments, questions?
So Rachel has a microphone, sir.
Well, I just want to say I was struck by the need for persistence, because I don't think that Bill Clinton or Barack Obama really wanted to support those definitions of marriage, but they felt they had to do it for political reasons, mm-hmm. and then things evolved and how long it took for some of them. And then there's a little story that might not be true, but I really like this. Those of us who use the women's restroom know that the lines are usually much longer. Mm-hmm. So supposedly there was a woman who went into the men's room where it was free. When she came out, there was a man waiting, and she said, oh, I'm sorry, I had to use the restroom that matches my birth certificate.
In the 1950s, my godmother was high up in the State Department and unlucky in love, so she did a lot of dating of the homosexual guys in the department, because otherwise they would be fired. It was a security risk. And then you flip, in the space of my lifetime, 2 years ago, the Supreme Court, the far right-wing Supreme Court, declares gay marriage legal. And I always thought that social norms moved on tectonic plates. And I asked myself, how could this wonderful thing happen so fast? And the only thing that I can think of as a non-expert is Harvey Milk was right when he said, if everyone comes out of the closet, people who are otherwise homophobic will say, it's my friends and neighbors. Mm-hmm. I wonder what you think. Well, how did this enormous progress occur so fast?
I think it's generation. There's a generational component to it, that younger people are more open-minded. And also, there are studies now showing that a lot of younger people refuse to be pigeonholed into a specific sexuality, and a lot of younger people will say, well, I'm pansexual, which is a different term than bisexual, but they'll say, I'm pansexual, I am attracted to the person as opposed to what gender they are, So that I think some of that is a generational thing. And again, like you say, I think that the fact that more and more people know someone who is lesbian or gay or bisexual or trans or different in one of those ways, in some other way, I think that makes it quote normalizes it. And I think most of the resistance that you see is from either people who are a lot older or who are very religious, in a very traditional kind of a sense.
So. Or fear being gay themselves.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. Shooter in the Post massacre was a Muslim. And he had supposedly pledged allegiance to ISIS, but there was also rumors that he had been to Pulse and had tried to pick up some guys while he's there. And I don't know whether he tried to pick them up that he was then going to try to murder them individually or what the deal was. But there he may have been a closeted gay Muslim man, who couldn't deal with it, who couldn't handle his own sexuality. So, and he was married, so to a woman. Mary.
Well, I think I can't remember the date you mentioned for some course at the university, but yeah. I did take a course back in the 70s, mid to late 70s, and it was called Minority Women in the Arts, taught by Evie Beck. It was really lesbian history, but for the catalog, it said Minority Women in the Arts.
Yeah, well, they probably couldn't use the phrase lesbian women in history, you know, in a class back then.
Well, just to correct that, I took a lesbian novel class in college, and that was probably 79 or 80 at University of Nebraska.
Yeah, well, there you go. Very good.
Could you define the different spectrum of the gay movement? You know, there's all these different terms that I'm not familiar with.
How many days do you have?
Oh, okay. Well, just a smattering then.
Well, there's, both sexuality and gender are now believed to exist on a spectrum as opposed to, there's black and white opposites. And so, for instance, there's sexuality, there's also gender identity. In my case, for instance, my brain tells me I was assigned female at birth based on what the doctor saw between my legs, and my brain has always told me I'm female. So I am considered to be a cisgender female, and I am attracted to men. So that makes me a straight cisgender female. Okay, if I were assigned female at birth and considered and also see myself as female and I'm attracted to women, then I'm a lesbian, a cisgender lesbian. But you could also be transgender and be assigned male at birth, but your brain tells you you're female. And so you transition to a woman, but you're always attracted to women. So that would make you a transgender lesbian, okay? Because you are, it's complicated. It's a very complicated, it's like kind of like a sphere almost. It's multidimensional. It's not, So it's, I would recommend online look for the Genderbread Person 3.0, I think. And it looks like a gingerbread man, but it shows different, it shows that kind of the spectrum of sexual orientation, gender identity, and also things like what they call gender presentation. So there are women who are, for instance, a lot more feminine than I am, who dress much more femininely, if you want to call frills and high heels and whatever. And then there are some men who dress in a more feminine fashion, so their presentation is more feminine. So it's a complicated issue, and like I said, if you have a couple of days, we can talk about it. No.
I was wondering whether talking about the fact that sometimes a baby, many times a baby is
We can't hear you, Mitchie, so.
Is it on?
Yeah, but you have to speak right to it, okay.
I'm wondering whether conversations amongst the general population have included more increasingly talk about the fact that babies are born with ambiguous sexual parts.
Yeah.
Do they talk freely about that? Or
probably not.
Why is that?
Well, because I think in the United States we have had very rigid gender roles for many, many years, and that's why I think a lot of the transgender movement stuff is very upsetting to a lot of people, but I think a lot of people are ignorant. That very, very ignorant, and it's not a subject that is covered in schools. I think partly because you would have to be much higher up in the educational food chain, to get to that point. I think a lot of people don't get past the fact that there are X and Y chromosomes, and they don't know that there are hormonal conditions that can, you can have X and Y chromosomes, but your hormones will maybe make you, maybe you may have a uterus and ovaries, but your ovaries don't function, or they overfunction, or, you could have a condition like hirsuteness. You could be female, assigned female based on your genitals, but you have a super amount of hair, like you grow a beard or something. So there's lots of different conditions It's genes, it's what they call epigenetics, which is how the environment, internal and external environment, and history, your personal history affects your genes. There's all kind of things that go into it. So I think basically it's there's a lot of ignorance, and there's just a general amount of ignorance of science in the United States in general.
I think it would help if these things were more freely talked about.
Well, of course it would.
Then it would get some of the excitement and anxiety and so forth.
It would, but I think part of the problem is that a lot of people don't believe that there should be any, quote, sex education in schools.
Right.
You know, and there are a lot of places where if you even hint at accurate sex education in schools, then the people will go ballistic. So,
seems to me these days that a lot of the attacks on the LGBTQ are using the Religious Freedom Act.
Mm-hmm.
And I think deliberately, I mean, I think of that cake thing that's coming up in the Supreme Court. Guy could have just as easily said he's busy and pointing to the baker down the street. It's almost like they deliberately used that to bring up the Religious Freedom Act to mm-hmm. Basically discriminate against gays anymore. Do you know if there's any work on the part of the LGBT groups to work on that sort of Religious Freedom Act?
Oh, I'm sure there is. There's so many groups out there. There's Human Rights Campaign, Lambda Legal, National Center for Lesbian Rights. There's a whole bunch of groups. Probably the ACLU is probably involved with it. I mean, I see stuff like this online, but I haven't really followed all of that super closely. I mean, I see it because my friends send me links to The Advocate, and I read stuff in The Advocate and LGBT Nation and Q Nation and different things like that. So, but I can't tell you specifically what exactly is going on, but I'm sure there is stuff pushing against that. So,
I want to speak to the idea of how do we keep track of all the things on the spectrum because there's so many, and I do think that there's a lot of really good writing out there, and I think there's a lot of research that can be done. But I had an experience recently talking to a family friend who is a lesbian. She's married to a woman. They have a 16-year-old daughter who's dating a person who doesn't identify with a binary gender and uses pronouns like they and them and there. And she said, oh, here I thought I was open-minded and I could accept everything, but I'm trying to make sense of this. And her daughter, and she said, you know, how do I know I'm getting it right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a fear that a lot of us have, that, you know, it's as new ideas are coming out, it's easy to feel like, oh, am I becoming one of these ignorant people who's set in my ways? But being willing to say to an individual, okay, how do you identify?
Yes.
Oh, what does that mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
How would you like me to refer to you?
Yeah.
How can I support you? And I think that both looking at the academic writing that's out there, but mm-hmm. also connecting with individuals and continuing to be open-minded about what does this person need from me is a way to, quote unquote, keep up,
as
our understanding of gender as a culture becomes more complicated.
No, that's very good. And that's the first thing to do. Here we talk about the inherent worth and dignity of every person and respecting people on their journey, which I think is the second principle. I don't have them memorized. But approach people in, you know, when you're talking to individuals and you don't know, you say, what's your name? Try to find out, you know, ask them what their pronouns are, you know, if they're not obvious, you know. And that's the thing, is that we want to put people in boxes. You know, we want to be, it's a human desire, but I think it's also a very American, like I said, because of gender roles and things. It's a human desire to put people in boxes. And I think, again, like I said, it's a generational thing. A lot of younger people don't want to be in a box, you know, and they don't, it's not that they don't want to be, they don't feel like they fit in any of those boxes. Penny, oh, wait.
Okay. Gary. Okay. Wanted to broaden the question a little bit.
But put it both of your...
Yeah. I wanted to broaden the question a little bit. Many years ago, as I observed various religious leaders being exposed as having affairs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and watching people who were very extreme and abdicating a moral position, I came to the conclusion that anybody who was very extreme and trying to condemn others was not very happy with themselves, mm-hmm. that they're hiding something in themselves. It may not be the exact same thing they're condemning, but they're finding something. See, I'm better.
Yeah.
I don't have this, or I can deny it because I'm against it. And I think that goes much broader than just the LGBTQ question, but
oh, sure.
The whole question of I got to attack somebody to prove that I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. It's called projection. So, Penny? Oh, Sandy.
I'm just going to wrap it up here, maybe.
Yeah, we're getting. We're getting a little late, aren't we?
Just a quick response to what you said. We can pat ourselves on the back a little bit at this year's General Assembly, the Unitarian Universalist Association's annual General Assembly. We were asked to put a pronoun on our name tags.
That's right.
Which was very helpful. And we're running out of time.
Yes. So we've done? Okay. All right, thank you. You can just leave that for those.
Thank you. All right, our offering, just to remind you, will be shared with Beacon House. And there's information about it in the program. Thank you. Now is the time for us to welcome guests and visitors. If you're here for the first or second time or haven't attended for a while, we invite you to introduce yourself and say what brought you here if you would like to do so. And Rachel has the mics.
Hi, I'm Susie Murray, and I'm a friend of Anne's from Madison PFLAG. And I just moved to Madison about 6 years ago from Appleton. And in Appleton and previous, I was going to Catholic churches. And so I thought, oh, good, I'm moving to Madison. Time to change that. So I've been exploring the last 5-6 years. So thanks.
Well, I'm not introducing anybody new, but I just want to remind everyone that there's a meeting after church today to discuss the remodeling. It wasn't an announcement. So, and that's a kind of a repeat performance from last May. And then next Sunday, there's a special parish meeting to also talk about the remodeling.
What time will the meeting start and where?
Here.
Right
after service.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had that on our, we were going to announce at the end, but that's good. Thank you for bringing that up. That's fine. And I'm happy to see Mary Summers came back after last week. Thank you. All right. Oh, what did you have?
The stretch class is meant to go on now, but if you want to wait and have this meeting, we can do that, but I think we should meet in one corner and decide what we're going to do.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Yeah, well, okay, thank you. We'll work that out. It sounds like there's a couple things meeting after church.
doing at the annex.
Ah, okay. All right. We're an active group. All right. Our final hymn is number 325. Thank you. Our closing words will be read by Patty Stockdale.
These are the closing words. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard. The path is never clear, and stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. Wayne B. Arneson.
Thank you for coming. Please join us for fellowship and coffee, and stay for the meeting about the remodeling. All right.